The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
New England is known for its charming towns, comforting foods, and of course its historical contributions, but the Downeast region can have a dark side. I'm investigative journalist Kylie Lowe, and on my weekly podcast, Dark Downeast, I dig into both decades-old and modern-day cases from my home state of Maine and the greater New England area. In each episode of Dark Downeast, I seek insight from law enforcement officials, family members, and other loved ones who are both deeply familiar with the cases and the individuals at the heart of them. Join me as I unveil intricacies of these stories that are often overlooked, honor the grit of those searching for justice, and shine a light on cases that you aren't hearing on other podcasts. Listen to Dark Downeast now, wherever you're listening.
Welcome back to The Subscription Show. I am Tim here today on Thursday, February 23rd, 2023 with Jennifer Amell and Lance Reinsterna. What's going on, you two?
Hey, what's up?
It's snowing. It's very heavy snow and the dome, the winter dome has collapsed. So,
oh boy.
So my day started. I'm not in a good mood, to be honest, to be perfectly honest. Oh.
Yeah. Well, this episode of The Subscription Show is going out to the public feed this weekend. We are recording this on Thursday, February 23rd, but it will air on the public feeds of Crawlspace and Missing on Sunday and Monday of this weekend. And so I guess that's the 26th and 27th of February. But it'll also air on the subscription channel a little earlier because that's what's up. We get it to you as soon as we can. If you're one of our subscription show subscribers of Missing Premium or Crawlspace Premium, we appreciate that. We appreciate any listener, for the record. But if you want to join and subscribe, get bonus episodes, weekly bonus episode, you get everything ad-free, and you get some early releases. You can subscribe in your Apple Podcasts app. Or if you're not an Apple user, you can go to missing.supportingcast.fm or crawlspace.supportingcast.fm, even though they basically go to the same place.
All roads lead to our subscription service.
Yes, that's just the way we like it.
Like Rome.
Right.
That was a round of applause for a job well done.
Yes.
Announcing the subscription service.
Yeah, we've got a lot to talk about today, huh?
I just want to get out of the way right away. I'm actually kind of irritated with myself that I did not know that Julian Sands has been missing since January of this year.
Mm. Wow, yeah.
The Warlock actor has been missing since January 13th.
Right, in California?
Yeah, San Gabriel Mountains. He's 65 years old, went for a hike on Mount Baldy, Southern California. And by all accounts, the authorities have said that the outcome is probably not going to be the best one. Yeah, so he's one of those actors that when we talked about this earlier, we were like, oh, who's this guy? And then you see his face and you're like, oh, that guy. Like, not a A-list Hollywood actor. He was in Warlock. I think we discovered he was in Arachnophobia, but he was a really excellent character actor. And just a real, like, shame to not only see this, but not realize that this was a thing until this morning. I had no idea.
Yeah. Mount Baldy's no joke either.
Yeah. What's that terrain like, Tim?
It's crazy heavy, you know. It's much like Mount Shasta that we hear about. A lot of disappearances near there. Mount Baldy is in San Bernardino County, outskirts of L.A. And yeah, I've definitely known some people who have hiked it, and I don't think it's easy. And I think there's some skiing and crap like that too. But I've never gone to it because I hate being cold. elevation almost 4,200.
Southern California.
Yeah, I mean, if you get up there, it'll get, you know, you get some snow. But yeah, never the kind of thing I wanted to do when I was out there.
Yeah, I mean, you hear these missing persons cases like in wilderness, and most likely, like, your mind kind of jumps to like some kind of accident or just, you know, getting lost there, and less foul play or anything.
Yeah.
But obviously hoping for the best for Julian Sands' family. But yeah, maybe not.
Was he alone when he went missing?
Yeah, I think that's...
He was.
Yeah, all the articles that I've read, he was alone.
Okay, yeah. And 65 years old. So yeah, don't know what he was suffering from, mentally or physically, but...
I honestly didn't read anything that said that he was suffering from anything. It kind of gave the indication or the implication that he was kind of an active person. Again, just learning about it this morning. So sort of learning about it in real time as we're talking about it. The California Highway Patrol hit on a possible electronic device on January 25th, but nothing came of that.
Yeah. And apparently there was another missing hiker, like, in the same age range as Sands. His name was Jin Chung. He was 75 years old, resident of LA. He was actually found pretty recently, having suffered some, quote, weather-related injuries and a leg injury.
Okay.
But he was, you know, rescued. I mean, since January, though, that's a long time to recover someone who's still with us, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there were a couple of younger folks who were rescued from Mount Baldy, actually, on February 21st. 17-year-old and a 29-year-old. They were hiking, and they were apparently okay. They were rescued. And then there was a body of Robert Gregory, who was recovered, and he lived in California. He was reported missing on January 14th, just days before his 62nd birthday, and he was buried in snow, about 300 feet below the summit of Mount Islip. So I take it that's in the same area.
Hmm.
Yeah, that's even higher. That's about double the peak of Mount Baldy. Wow.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's tragic. I definitely go with somebody. You know, if you're hiking. I don't know.
Yeah,
I hear
definitely
about this all too often. Yeah,
I know. And we just covered that disappearance of Abby Flynn when we did our Super Bowl episode with John Lorden, and that one is, there's nothing to fault Abby Flynn for, just going for a walk, just to probably get some fresh air or something, and not a trace of her has been found. So these things happen, and I don't know, do you look at like the most obvious outcome, slipping on rocks and falling in the ocean? And I think what the police chief, when John was telling us about this, of Gloucester said, when he said, people are trying to have me prove a negative, makes my job even harder. Like, prove she wasn't abducted. Prove Julian Sands had, you know, was schizophrenic or something and went into the woods in a, like a psychotic break or something.
Well, I was, when I suggested he might have been suffering from something, I was more suggesting like health issues. He's, getting a little up in age. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of deaths in national parks, you know, and I don't know, people who get older. Some people don't want to burden their family with caretaking and things like that, and you know, we'll wander. We spoke with Laura Risti this week about the disappearance of Polly Melton from, I think it was 1981, in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park. And that one kind of reminds me of this because she just vanished into thin air while on a hike with her friends. And we'll get into that maybe next week or the week after. But yeah, Laura Risti is great. We spoke with her for our series on Trenny Gibson, disappearance of Trenny Gibson, also from that same park. So yeah, I mean, there's just a lot of disappearances in national parks. And honestly, I think one of the reasons is the terrain, and especially if you're alone, walking by yourself, like a sprained ankle, you know, a twisted ankle on like a fallen tree could potentially end up killing you, you know?
Yeah. And we have another circumstance with the episode of Missing that was released today when we spoke with John Fariso, who was looking into the disappearance of Jacob Olivier. And that's a completely different type of terrain where he went missing in the Everglades. And again, going back to like maybe the simplest solution is, I hate saying it, but his truck was found near a body of water. He's in an area with high alligator activity and he had a gun and they can't find the gun. So John Fariso puts these elements together and says it's most likely that he is in that water. However he got there is another story, but it's most likely that he's in that water. And again, the alligator element.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I mean, even if like the wildlife didn't get to the remains or whatever, it's, I mean, you can sink into like black water in the swamp, right? And just like never be recovered.
Yeah.
Mm. Ugh. Yeah, and that one's a national park as well. That's Everglades National Park in Homestead, Florida. Jacob went missing in August of 2011. John Fariso is a great investigator. He's retired now, but he was formerly a sergeant detective at the missing persons unit in New York City, which is pretty impressive group. And yeah, he's great. He did say that he's investigating this as a possible suicide, you know, so I think that's where his head's at until proven otherwise, you know, is basically what he says. And he says, find the gun that Jacob had because it should have a serial number. And that could lead you to finding Jacob, or at least it's a good lead is basically what he said. Maybe he sold the gun. Yeah. I mean, I think if they found the gun and Jacob had sold it before he went missing, that's really good information. If they can't find the gun, I guess that's information too, but it probably means it's still with him or was with him when he died, I guess. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think one of the key elements there is that the holster for the gun was still in the truck. So if he sold the gun, there's absolutely no reason why he wouldn't sell the holster too. I mean, or just at least like package it together, unless the holster, like if you're buying a gun on like a under the table type deal, I mean, you're probably going to get the holster. But here, what am I doing? I'm trying to prove a negative. I don't know the gun was sold. I don't know why a holster wouldn't be sold with the gun. And I think that's what John does, is he works that out and says, well, okay, it makes more sense for him to take the gun out of the holster and then go into a secluded area to commit suicide. So if you find the gun, it's probably really close to where he is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Was he known to like drive around with his firearm? Like he had it concealed or, you know, personal carry permit?
Not really sure. Apparently he bought, I think he bought the gun in Texas. And John wasn't, I don't think was able to like get the information, like the serial number exactly. I think you're going to need to, call Texas or have a Texas investigator, work on that and try to search for that serial number. But again, right? Like if Jacob sold it, who's to say like he sold it on the books? Like he could have sold a gun like to someone for some cash and no one has any idea about the serial number, right?
Yeah.
It's possible. Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. I wonder about like the reciprocity laws between Texas and Florida too. It's like I know some states like you don't necessarily need a permit or to register that gun in that state because like Pennsylvania and Florida have reciprocity weirdly. My thought process there is like, was it unregistered in Florida? And that would make that like selling process that much easier.
Yeah. I don't think he spent a lot of time in Florida. Really just before he went missing, he was apparently in a hotel room in Daytona Beach. And then met up with a girlfriend, an ex-girlfriend in Florida, who he reportedly told that he was considering suicide. Is that correct, Lance? That's how that went, right?
The Florida girlfriend was the one who he told he was having issues, I believe. Yeah.
Yeah, and that was a few weeks or less before he went missing.
Yeah.
And there was a part where we spoke with John Fariso, who spoke with Jacob's other ex-girlfriend or a different ex of Jacob's in Texas. And before Jacob went missing, he actually drove to their houses, to their places, both of them. So he drove to his ex-girlfriend's, and apparently that's why he was in Florida, to see her. John said that the girlfriend that he spoke with in Texas said that he was going to get his life back together. But I think that was a couple years before he went missing. So there must have been some problem after that. Yeah.
So this subscription show is for the public, but this is what you get. This is like kind of for people to hear, but a lot of it is for us to kind of suss out. So this is what we're doing right now, is kind of figuring out like John's investigation. Even he's a very New York guy. He talks very fast. So during that conversation, Tim and I were kind of texting, like, we got to go back to that. We have to revisit what he just said. What's the time frame here? This is us just kind of like working out the recent conversations we've had. Also, John wanted to be clear. Sorry to interrupt. John wanted to be clear that the image of Jacob that is more widely circulated has him with this mohawk. And he said that's really not what his hair was always like. It was more of that bowl style haircut.
So, yeah, I mean, it seems like a good kid. 23 years old when he went missing. 5'6", 130. So, And John is looking for an investigator who can potentially help and pick the case up. So if you have any investigative experience, if you are a licensed PI in maybe Florida or Texas and feel inspired to get involved, send PIs for the Missing an email, please, at investigationsforthemissing.org. You can find out some more information there. Another conversation we aired this week is with authors LaDonna Humphrey and Alicia Lockhart of the book Strangled and the Deep Dark Secrets podcast. I really thought this episode was great. I kind of feel like it's a crawl space classic, to be honest. I feel like it's got everything you're looking for in a crawl space episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like, may I say, you guys handled it so deftly, and so did LaDonna, and because it is like quite a dark subject, but it was handled with like levity and I don't know, it's hard to describe.
Right? I really credit LaDonna and Alicia for setting the tone of that, because really it's all their information. This great book, Strangled, which they wrote together, is really scary. And it's scary because it's real. And we all know, we've all heard death fetish. It's on the peripheral of true crime. So entering into the conversation, this could have been really dark. But they set the tone of it being, like you said, there's a little bit of levity in there. And it would have been a really tough conversation and even a tougher listen if it was the real sordid details of this lifestyle. I mean, community. I can't even call it a community, because a community in my mind is supposed to represent something a little bit more progressive and positive and welcoming. This is like a, I guess, what do we say? Lifestyle, a group. This type of fetish is
right,
sordid and dangerous.
Yeah, death fetish, my goodness. And Alicia talks about kind of personal experiences within this community. It's not like she sought after it. It was like a job that turned into something weird. I don't know. You got to listen to her talk about it. It's a crazy, crazy story. She's a victim. And I think this is a worthwhile thing to look into in terms of potentially solving crimes.
It's still playing out. They're still fighting this. Alicia at one point says like she still kind of baits them. She'll go in and she'll go into these forums and she'll draw them out. And there are moments where LaDonna has described how they wanted to meet Alicia at a Barnes and Noble and take her home and like kill her and then have sex with her dead body. And that's what they're doing. They're bringing out these people and they're saying these things. And I don't know what the legal parameters are, but LaDonna made it seem, and she's a licensed private investigator, so she probably has a much better grasp on this than I do, but she kind of made it seem like because they set a time, a place, and a date, that was a step closer to an actual arrest, because even though the act wasn't carried out, it had those elements of planning.
Right.
Right. Right. Right. How is this not criminal threatening?
Artistic expression.
Okay.
Yeah, I think in the case that you're describing, Lance, where Alicia tried to get someone to meet her at Barnes & Noble, or at least, you know, that was their meeting spot, that person was under the understanding or the belief that they were meeting so he could kill her, I guess.
Yeah.
But obviously Alicia did not go. And, you know, I guess no guarantee that writer was serious either and would have done that, and obviously didn't end up doing that with Alicia. But did they do it another time? I think that's the part, you know. So it's like they try to get these people's information, their IP addresses, their names, their contact info, and send it to their local law enforcement to put them on the radar, which, you know, is great, honestly, great work, because I don't know, thought crime or not, you should be on the police's radar if you think you're planning to kill somebody.
Yeah, agreed. Wow, they are so brave.
They are a badass. Yeah.
I'd be so scared.
I mean, not even just like the whole dark web and the death fetish, but they also have to battle with that thought crime element that a lot of these people stand behind, that concept of this is my artistic expression. If you're policing it and it's a thought crime, where do you stop on that? This is a violation of my rights. So there's that tipping point there that they also have to balance. But LaDonna said that, I think it was LaDonna that said, they use the example of horror movies, how, you know, well, you watch horror movies, people who are fans of horror movies, no one's shutting down the horror movie industry. And she just had a great response to that, which was like, well, no one ever, there's not an influx of people murdering other people because they watched a horror movie. Like, that's not, they don't have forums that are prevalent, which people describe reenacting a scene from a horror movie and actually going forward, you know, to make those plans. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of gray. It's a very gray area that they have to battle.
Yeah,
it's true. Immediately what came to mind was Dahmer watching, wouldn't he watch like Rosemary's Baby or The Exorcist? I think it was The Exorcist. Like over and over and over again, like while he had his victims in his apartment.
So is that a thing? Do people watch horror movies and then, like, I've never known that. Like, I've known that death fetish exists, but when LaDonna said that, it kind of came as like, okay, yeah, I've never heard of people who are fans of horror movies trying to recreate the horror.
No, I think that's an outlier for sure. Like, I think it would be pretty easy statistically to like prove that that's not kind of the impetus to commit murder. Because horror movies, like, you do have like box office numbers and download numbers and all those things, and then you can easily kind of compare those to murder rates and stuff.
But
anecdotally, I guess it happens.
But maybe murderers watch a lot of horror movies. Like, I don't know that there's any research on that we can prove or disprove.
Yeah.
But if you like horror movies, that does not make you a murderer.
I mean, there's my favorite genre, and I'm not about to go recreate like a scene from, you know, Terrifier.
Oh my god.
Or Anaconda.
Anaconda. Is that a comedy?
If you ask me.
Kind of. I didn't think so as a 7-year-old when I saw it. Snake food.
I just remember John Voight like opening his eyes after he's like been wrapped up by the snake. Oh my god, that movie.
John Voight.
Yeah. He was an Oscar winning actor doing that movie.
Yeah.
No, my problem with John Voight and Anaconda is he plays like some like guy with an accent. I forget what nationality he's supposed to be in that movie, but he has like a terrible accent.
from someplace in the world.
Yeah, but I think the movie takes place in South America. I don't think he's supposed to be South American, but I'm not really sure. But yeah, he just has some, like, I don't know if it's like a bad French accent that he's putting on or something, but it's terrible.
I don't know. It could be dangerous. You need protection?
Do you think the director was like, we can't tell John Voight that he sucks at this accent?
I do. Yeah. Let me see if I... What accent was John Voight doing in Anaconda?
This is a you very important up. Aside.
Yeah, you look that up, and I'm going to just plug real quick that going to button up the LaDonna Alicia conversation. Jen and myself will be attending the Northwest Arkansas True Crime Fest to we're going to have a presentation on Dark Valley, the new podcast that's coming out in May. The Northwest Arkansas True Crime Fest is organized by LaDonna. It's on May 20th. And as a bonus, after we interviewed LaDonna and Alicia, we were thinking it might be cool to interview them live at the fest, and LaDonna just agreed to it. So nice. They're going to be, we're going to have a little double bill there at the Northwest mm-hmm. Arkansas True Crime Fest. I've never been to Arkansas. I'm excited to attend this, and LaDonna has sold a lot of tickets so far, a few hundred. So
yeah,
if you haven't heard of it, if you have nothing to do, or even if you do have something to do on those dates, 19th, 20th, and 21st, but the event is just the 20th, cancel your plans.
Reschedule. Yeah. Reschedule what you have to do.
If one of your kids is graduating from high school or college or university, skip it. Head out to Northwest Arkansas.
Yeah, very excited for that event for sure.
Tim, we need an update.
Yeah, John Voight made two top 10 or top 15 lists of worst movie accents in film history. He was voted number one on the MTV version. It says, it's as if Tony Montana got swallowed by a large snake and then got spit back out for leaving such a bad taste. But apparently he was doing a Spanish accent, and he was 9 out of 12 in womensday.com. And Women's Day says John Voight's Spanish accent in Anaconda is actually the most absurd part of the movie about giant snakes eating people.
I love it. And we'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors.
Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of The Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to The Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into The Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to The Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in The Daily Book Club.
Step into the hidden corridors of the past with Hometown History, where every episode uncovers the untold stories and secrets nestled in the streets and alleys of our own backyards. We bring history to life, revealing the extraordinary in the ordinary, from local legends to forgotten tales that shape the communities we know today. Tune into Hometown History and embark on a journey through time, right from where you are. Gather round, friend, and join me by the fire. I have a secret to share. When I was a child, I lived with my grandma. She allowed me to watch unsolved mysteries. Fast forward to 2008, my freshman year of college. A series of armed robberies on campus escalated into a serial rapist's reign of terror. That's when I created my first crime podcast. In January 2014, I picked up the podcast again from my college roommate who fell for an underage girl online, to the chilling story of a murdered nun in 1969 Baltimore, and in the throwaway series, I share my own journey of overcoming homelessness and how that experience led me to unmask a serial killer and identify three of his Jane Doe victims. This is Foul Play Crime Series, where the stories are real and the truth is waiting to be discovered.
Thanks to our sponsors, and now we're back to the program. One other update we need to speak about today is the disappearance of Jessica Stacks. Jessica Stacks went missing from New Albany, Mississippi on January 1st, 2021. And there was recently an update, an interview that, or News Nation did. I guess they did an interview. They did a little video. They did an article, but they made some phone calls. They spoke with Kathy, Jessica's mom. They also spoke with Jessica's ex-boyfriend, Jerry Wayne Baguette, who apparently changed his story on the last time he saw Jessica, which is a bit mind-blowing.
Yeah. I mean, so he also was purportedly the last, like in the original story, he was purportedly the last one to see Jessica alive. And he had this whole like tale about getting in a boat that had no motor, going down a river, and like the boat taking on water and Jessica getting out of the boat and disappearing, which no matter which way you dice it, makes absolutely no sense. So, I mean, it's not a total shock that he changed his story, but like that to me just it's very, very suspicious.
Hey, why is he changing his story, right? Why is he changing his story? Is it because police are questioning him harder? Did he listen to our episode on it?
Yeah.
Are people talking to him about like they're on to you? They're questioning these things. Maybe the person who was photographed in that CCTV footage from the gas station, who Jessica's mom, right, is pretty adamant that that's not Jessica in the vehicle.
Correct. Yeah.
Maybe that person is starting to talk to say, like, I'm going to come out and say something about this.
Well, there would be several people who would have knowledge.
yeah. Right? Run down the list. Yeah.
Yeah, and you can start at that surveillance video at the gas station because Jerry Baguette says, the last time I saw Jessica was a few days before then. So he's now changed his story and said that he didn't even see Jessica on New Year's Eve. It was a few days before. So he's going back to like the 29th of December in 2020. He's saying that now that's the last time he saw her. But previously he had stated that they got into a boat that he borrowed, and there's surveillance video and a photo of a woman in the passenger seat who could be Jessica, but it's very fuzzy video. Could be someone else too. So the woman's wearing a hat. But so if Jerry says the last time I saw Jessica was a few days before she went missing, then who the hell is that in the truck, Jerry?
Yeah. He's contradicting himself.
I mean, I think, you know, Kathy, and there's a woman, I think is Jessica's aunt named Barb Dunlap, who's on Twitter and does some good tweeting about this case. You know, they have not been shy about not believing that that was Jessica from the beginning. Actually, they even gave us a name of someone they thought it was.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let me get the, so this means that his entire boat story is not the entire, right?
Yes.
The entire episode we did is not true, according to him. The boat, the shovel that they used as an oar, they were hunting from the boat, and she got up. All the boat went down the river. All of that's not true.
Started taking on water.
So here's what I think. I don't think Jessica was on that boat, first of all. No. But they did. So maybe something happened the night before or that morning. I don't know. But then maybe Jerry was like not thinking clearly and was like, well, I need to come up with something and I got to have proof that this is what happened. So he borrows the boat, brings it to the river without anything to do with Jessica, plants her, you know, coat, gloves, shoes, that sort of thing. Because there was physical evidence to kind of back up his story, but that easily could have been this like half-baked plan to, you know, back up this like crazy story.
Jesus.
Yeah.
I don't know, man.
Yeah, it's bullshit.
It is. Yeah. And every time I look at his ugly face, he has of the people that we've covered for like potential perpetrators of crimes, he has probably in the top three most punchable faces. And I've said it before, but if he was the guy that showed up at your family cookout, like you're having your family cookout, everyone's having a good time, horseshoes, that beanbag game that people play.
Cornhole?
I don't want to call it cornhole. I'm going to call it the beanbag toss game. He shows up, instantly brings the party down, right? Just looking at his face, you know that once that guy shows up, you're like, ugh, Jerry's here.
Yeah.
He like corners you by the barbecue.
Yeah. Yeah. He brings a six pack of Miller Lite and then drinks your beer.
Uh-huh. It has like mesquite chips that nobody likes.
Oh, I tasted that when you said that. Mesquite barbecue chips. Like, oh, there's Jerry with his Miller Lite and barbecue chips.
Yeah, he's like covered in the dust.
In the dust. He's been eating them in the car. Which he probably just like took off of someone else's kitchen counter. Not to laugh about this, but that's just how much emotion just looking at his face.
It's infuriating that like this dumb of a story could like stall an investigation and an arrest and like prevent justice for Jessica's family. It's just like insane.
Yeah.
Own up to it, man.
Yeah. And he beat her.
Yeah, right. He did. He did abuse her. And Kathy, Jessica's mom, posted pictures and I don't even think Jerry denied it.
Right.
So unfortunate. And that Barb Dunlap, by the way, she has been sharing some really interesting stuff on Twitter. She's been sharing some private like text messages and things like that. Screenshots. Things like that with people who might know more. One here who is allegedly from Billy Jack Rogers, who you guys might remember that we noted in that episode. He said, well, I just talked to Brian and Jimmy. They did not find nothing. Hell, they looking in wrong place. So I don't know how you know they're looking in the wrong place if you don't know where she is.
Tim, can you give that quote again, but in a Spanish accent?
In your best John
Voight.
My
best John Voight.
Your best John Voight.
And here it seems like Kathy is sort of campaigning with someone who's running for sheriff. His name is Danny Dillard, running for Union County Sheriff. And he says, if elected sheriff of Union County, I will make a pledge to all the family of Jessica Stacks to look at all the evidence and turn over every rock. I'm going to put a top-of-the-line investigation division together and work with them hand and foot to see this is done right.
Danny Dillard. Let's get you Danny on the Dillard show.
For
get
sheriff.
You on the show. Let's talk about what you're going to do.
Yeah, that's
absolutely
interesting. Yeah. Now, the other sheriff who I'm forgetting his name at this moment, but we did
Buford?
No, I forget what it is, but
Boss Hogg.
He had said something to Kathy about they're just some good old boys, which was really upsetting to us when we spoke with Kathy. But he apparently, that sheriff has apparently given his information or all the information found in the case to the district attorney in that area. So it seems like now the sheriff isn't where we need to put the pressure, but it's more on the DA to actually do something about the case, like actually go find her and, maybe investigate and interrogate these people like Billy Jack, like Jerry, like there's another woman named, I think, Barbie. There's a few other people, Jerry's son, Hunter, I would say as well, who has been messaging with Barb Dunlap, who was apparently called by Jerry to pick up his dad. Mm-hmm. So there is some, some information that needs to be sussed out here by law enforcement. But make no mistake, there are lies being told to Jessica's family by these people. So Let's go. Let's wrap this case up.
Yeah. Go to the store where they got the gas. I mean, talk to the person, the attendant working there. Find out what the demeanor was. Show them a picture. Was this guy here?
Yep.
See what they say. By the way, I looked up what does good old boy mean, and there's an actual like dictionary, Oxford Dictionary definition of this. A man who embodies some or all of the qualities considered characteristic of many white men of the southern U.S., including an unpretentious, conservative, intolerant attitude, and a strong sense of fellowship with and loyalty to other members of his peer group.
Not the kind of thing a sheriff should say to the mom of a missing woman about the person who was abusing her daughter and possibly made her daughter go missing. Also, again, the son, Hunter, was called apparently by Jerry for a ride that evening, and so there's a message from Barb that she posted on Twitter, and he says, "The night that happened, I got a call that he was lost and needed a ride home, and like any other son in this world would do, I went and got him, not having a clue that Jessica was even with him or anything that day." Several problems here. Now, apparently, according to Jerry, Jessica wasn't with him that day, and that was the morning. That wasn't the night. You guys see the problem there? That was supposed to happen in the morning that she went missing, not the night, Hunter. If you got a phone call that night, then there's more problems in this story than we even know. Mm-hmm.
Jesus. It's the simplest thing. Something happened to her that night. It does feel like the wheels are coming off of the wagon that Jerry has tried to build that contains his alibi. It's falling apart. Like, how are you going back on so many things? It's like a child who realizes that the lie that he or she told their parents is totally seen through, and now they have to just go back to the, you know, a blank slate and start over with a new lie.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you kind of have to be an intelligent person to lie well, right? To keep your story straight. I
mean, for a long time?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's already been inconsistent. Sheriff Jimmy Edwards. That's right. That's who it was. Right. Yeah. Still the sheriff. Jimmy Edwards. Okay. He's the one who said, good old boy. So Sheriff Jimmy Edwards, if you're listening to this, get on the phone to the DA. I know you turned over your information. I think that's fantastic. Well, now there seems to be more investigation to do because Jerry has changed his story. So please, you need to help out Jessica's family and go interview him again.
I mean, look at the pictures of her with the bruises on her face. Jerry doesn't comment on it, or maybe says, I didn't do that. Who did it then? Who else would have done that?
Jerry did it.
And now she's disappeared. And now he's changing his story to something completely different.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I understand wanting to build a case so it's, you know, an easy conviction or whatever. But yeah, we just haven't really seen any evidence that that's actually happening.
Build a case against a good old boy. He's one of us.
Yeah.
And we'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors.
Do you find yourself captivated by the inexplicable, entranced by enigmas, and tantalized by the unknown? We are Shane and Josh Waters, brothers who will weave you through tales that have mystified us for years. From haunted hotels to inexplicable disappearances,
our episodes offer you a panoramic view of the world's greatest mysteries, leaving no stone unturned, no clue unnoticed.
With a gripping narrative, we invite you to join us on a journey into realms of the unexplained.
We're unraveling the mysteries that have perplexed humanity for ages.
So, armchair detectives, curious minds, and seekers of the strange, it's time to put on your headphones and dim the lights.
Dive into the uncanny world of the Mystery Inc. podcast and prepare for a journey into the unknown that you'll never forget. And remember, some mysteries are better left unsolved, but not unexplored.
How's it going, everyone? It's Tim and Lance here. Have you ever wanted someone to read you creepy bedtime stories in the most velvety voice ever?
Well, you had me hooked at velvety, Tim. We are excited to share a podcast that is exactly that. It's called Nighty Night Bedtime Stories to Keep You Awake. And Tim, it's narrated by a friend of ours.
That's right. New York Times bestselling author and podcaster Rabia Chaudhry. Nighty Night is an anthology featuring classic horror stories this season and fictionalized true life stories in season one that are so creepy that you will realize reality is scarier than fiction.
And Tim, I know our favorite part of each episode is at the end when Rabia says, but wait, there's more to the story. And we get to hear those fascinating details about the author and the context of the tale. What's your favorite episode?
My favorite episode is The Tiny Hares from season one, which takes us on a harrowing journey when the narrator runs into a dangerous man in the woods. What about you?
Well, mine comes from the current season. It's called The Horla, in which we witness the protagonist spiral into a descent of madness. Tim, I feel like I'm constantly spiraling into a descent of madness, so I really relate to that one.
Well, I hear that. So dim your lights, get under a cozy blanket, and find and subscribe to Nighty Night wherever you get your podcasts.
Nighty Night, everyone.
Nighty Night, everyone.
Nighty Night, everyone.
Thanks to our sponsors, and now we're back to the program. You got a guy who's apparently said that, you know, apparently alluded to knowing where Jessica is buried, I would say, or at least where Jessica is. How about you go interview them all separately and catch them in a bunch of lies and then go do a search in where they said she is?
Yeah. Oh, bring the hammer down on this Jerry guy. Come on.
Cut Billy Jack Rogers a deal. How about that? Cut Billy Jack Rogers a deal. Hey, show us where Jessica is, and then you'll get a lesser sentence than stupid Jerry Baguette.
Yeah. I mean, he alluded to knowing where her body was, but if you look at like the literal, if you take what he said literally, he said they're looking in the wrong place, right? They're not. So, okay, just show us where she isn't then until we find her. If she's not here, is she here? Is she here? Is she here? You know, like, more information.
Yeah, it's unfortunate.
Prove this negative. Yeah, this is like so beyond the prove this negative. This is,
I mean,
prove it.
This is just about like go do the work. You know, go do the work and do a search. You know, and really, this case should be wrapped up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. None of this makes sense. I mean, I remember like when we first started talking about this and we were like, who goes out on a boat at like 6 a.m. on New Year's Day?
With a gun hunting from a moving boat on a raging Little Tallahatchie River. And maybe not raging, but moving fast. It was a swift moving river.
Right.
With no motor.
No motor.
And no paddle. No paddle or oar. They were using a shovel.
It wasn't even their boat.
Right.
And it was taking on water. Like someone would, people believe, but we're supposed to believe that there was a collective decision sometime before New Year's Day. We're going to celebrate New Year's Eve and then maybe we're not going to sleep. Let's get that boat. Go grab a gun. We're going to go hunting from a boat.
Yeah.
What?
I know. There's no way. Like if my boyfriend was like, honey, I know we had a long night ringing in the new year, but I really want to get up before the sun and go hunting from a boat. Like, no.
You're going to go grab.
Definitely not.
Grab this guy's boat.
It is such a stupid story. And we knew it then. And I urge anyone to scroll back in our feed and listen to, we did two episodes on Jessica Stax's disappearance. You know, when we were reading this information originally, we knew it was bullshit. I mean, it sounded stupid. If you're going to go hunt wildlife that is not fish, why would, you know what I mean? Like that doesn't make any sense. You're hunting deer or boar or something. Why would you get on a boat to do that?
What are you going to do with the animal after you shoot it?
Especially a boat you can't stop.
Right.
What did they
do?
Yeah, and I feel bad because, like, the first time we reported on this case, like, what was publicly out there in news articles, et cetera, was Jerry's bogus story. And then, like, as it happened, like, Kathy, Jessica's mom, reached out to us and was like, hey, you guys got everything wrong. I'm like, oh my gosh, we're so sorry. Please come on the show and explain what you know. And it's like she poked holes in every single little thing. And yeah, I hate to be part of, like, you know, I don't know, popularizing Jerry's initial story. But I think, like, yeah, you're right, Tim. Like, we were very, very suspicious of the whole circumstance from the get-go.
Yeah, we knew it. I mean, I think that's what you got to do. You got to take the story as told to police if you can find that, which is what we did. The researchers, you and I think it was maybe Shayna who worked on that one, who did. But clearly that is not what happened. And even from Jerry himself, that's not what happened. So. Mm-hmm.
I just remembered, and I'm so mad that I'm thinking about it now and or remembered it now so late in this episode, but am I misremembering this? Kathy was the one that broke down at the end of our interview, right?
That's correct, mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anybody who doesn't know this story, and I think we might have done it on a subscription show before, but at the end of our interview, Tim and I are on there with Kathy, her mom, on Zoom, and it's a very, very, very emotional interview in the first place. And yeah. She's trying so hard to not break down, and she's telling us this, and you can tell she's got, like, grief and anger and actual rage in her. And she thinks that she signed off from Zoom at the end of the interview. We said, okay, well, thank you. We're very sorry. And she thinks she signed off. And I can't even, think of this moment without getting choked up. She absolutely breaks down, like, sobbing, holding her head, crying. It all came out, and Tim and I were looking at her, and we were, after a while, we were just like, Kathy, we're sorry. And she realized she was still on, and she just, like, quickly, like, left the Zoom. But she was like, it was like the most emotional sobbing I've ever heard.
Yeah, it was a real pain that she was expressing there, you know, and she believes she was doing it privately, which yeah. I have to imagine is a different experience for that person than if they're doing it in front of people that, you know, you don't know.
Yeah. And yeah. Like, how many people have we interviewed that have, like, pushed it to that limit? From, you know, Bruce Maitland and John Palmer was another one of those interviews where they were trying so hard to just keep it together. Like, mm-hmm. years of interviewing people like that. And I hope she doesn't mind that I'm telling people that this story, but I think that people have to know, like, how bad this is, like, tearing her up.
Yeah, well, I guess here's the thing, right? We'll never know, because most people they leave the Zoom and we don't see that.
Yep.
We don't see that private breakdown. But I'm pretty sure almost every family member has some time like that after the interview where it's tough. It's tough sharing these stories, you know? It's asking them to go back through some of the most painful things in their lives. You know, they want to do it and we're here for them, but it's got to be so hard.
Danny Dillard should make a trip over to visit Kathy. Maybe take her out to dinner. I know that sounds weird, but do something human to show her that you're not just lumping Jerry in as a good old boy. And I guess we have to deal with Jerry beating somebody and then probably killing them. Just show that you're a human and you can relate to her.
I misspoke earlier. It was Kathleen Studer who worked on this, the original research in Jessica's case with you, I think, Jen. So big shout out to Kathleen. I'm sure she's following this case still. So that's what you get here on the sub show. This one might have been a little more fiery than normal.
Yeah, definitely didn't expect that. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I can't help it with this sheriff in Union County, that situation. And I do believe they've done some real investigation, and I'm sure they want to see justice too. But you know, if we're sitting here like 1,000 miles away and like we know there are multiple people caught in lies, I'm sure they know it too, but yeah. they gotta get it done. You know, they gotta move this forward.
Yeah. It's also their job.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's going to be our job to keep talking about them if they don't make this happen. Yeah. So, and that's, you know, that's just the truth. That's what we do. We put pressure. If there's an obvious place to put pressure, then we're going to do it. And I have to say, Jessica Stacks's case, like, is the most obvious on my radar right now of like what direction to push. Like, this is a pretty easy one for us right now.
Wow. 55 minutes.
Thanks a lot for listening.
55 minutes of yelling.
Go check out our episodes. We got some great episodes coming out next week. We spoke with Bob Ruff of Truth and Justice. That's going to come out next week.
Actually, Tim.
Yeah.
Step it back a little bit. Set yourself up. Say, so we go into the Bob Ruff thing. Hold on. We have some great episodes coming up next week.
Okay. We have some great episodes coming up next week. Next Wednesday, March 1st, we are speaking with Jim Harold of Campfire. We talk about some ghosts and some spooky stories. That's going to be a lot of fun. And we did speak with Bob Ruff yesterday. That episode is going to come out, I think, on Sunday, March 5th. And he's great to talk with. We spent some time with him at Obsess Fest this past year, and he's just a great guy. Great guy to talk with, and really funny.
Really,
we had a great conversation. Yeah. So make sure to check that out.
He reminded us that we've known each other for like almost 7 years.
I know, right? But this is the first time he's recognized you.
Well, that's the running joke with Bob, is that he doesn't recognize people after he's met them a couple of times. And we were talking about that, but then we went into the conversation and said that we had known each other since, what, 2017?
Yeah, so 2017. At least 6 years. CrimeCon 2016, 2017. Yeah, somewhere in that range. Yeah.
That's almost a decade.
He said that we invited him on Crawl Space in 2016. It's like, oh, we just got around to it. So, you know, that's...
right. 7 years later.
It wasn't like we forgot. We just, you know, now's the time.
That's very on brand with Bob Ruff, though.
Right. Sent the invitation in the slow mail.
Right. So thank check you. That out. All right, everyone, thanks for listening. If you want more of this bonus show content weekly, you can check out Missing Premium or Crawl Space Premium. Again, you can get it right there in your Apple Podcasts app, or you can go to crawlspace.supportingcast.fm or missing.supportingcast.fm if you're not an Apple user. That'll actually take you to the same place. And you'll get the same products, $4.99 a month, early releases, ad-free, and you'll love it, we promise.
And Tim, if one wanted to follow us on social media, where would one do this?
Wow. Well, one can follow us anywhere that, you know, pretty much the major social media channels. You can do that at Missing CSM or Crawl Space Podcast or Crawl Space Pod. Or on YouTube, it's just youtube.com/crawlspace.